Welcome to the Plain Label Podcast, Pod Shots.
Kick the tree. Take your bag and leave my house.
What? What's going on?
You don't want training.
Hey, you want me to break my leg?
Your brother. Remember?
You want this? What about this?
Hello and welcome to another episode of Pod Shots. I am your host, Eric Williams. For this episode, we have a Van Damme double feature with a discussion of the films Kickboxer and JCVD. Here to discuss the films with me is returning guest, Mr. Sean Pryor.
Hey, what's up, Eric, man? Thank you for having me on the show. And unlike the film Kickboxer, I am not nicknamed the White Warrior.
That is true. That would be a misnomer for sure. Before getting into our discussion, I would like to mention that this podcast is brought to you by the Deliberate Noise Network. Head over to deliberatenoise.com and check out some of the other shows that are over there. And Mr. Pryor, let's get into a little drink roll call. What are you having on a weekday?
I'm having a Stella Artois.
Uh-huh.
And it is crisp and it is tasty and I like it.
That is a wife beater beer, my friend.
Really now?
That has a poor history, yes, sir.
I did not know that it had a poor history.
It is. It's kind of like it's a little bit like the rep around like a PBR or something like that.
Are you serious?
That's the word. The beer itself, I quite enjoy, especially with their fancy glass.
Yes, no, I do too. I think it's a great beer.
But yeah, like, that's known as a wife beater beer.
Oh no, I don't like that connotation.
I know it.
I don't like that.
Rewind. I didn't say anything about that.
Okay, good. Thank
you. Your beer is great. Good beer. I'm going with a little red wine because that's what I do on a weekday before I have to go to school the next day.
Now, is your red wine, is it more of a sweet red wine or is it just a standard red?
Well, this one, it is from the Mendoza Vineyards in Argentina. It is called the Gaucho is the brand, and it is a Malbec. And it is, a Malbec is for me a little on the, flavor forward side, a little bit more of a beginner's wine, okay. Is the way that I kind of think about it. It's a little bit of a blend typically. For me, a Malbec tastes a lot like a blend.
Okay.
Where it's a little bit, it's got a little bit of dry and a little bit of sweet kind of together.
Nice, nice. I've actually started partaking into the world of wine this year.
Mm-hmm.
It was something that I never really got into until this year. And then I realized, hey, I'm grown. I can drink this. And it has been fantastic.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where I remember the first couple glasses of wine I had and I was like, oh my God, I feel like I have some kind of film on my tongue. Like this is so unsatisfying and so different than a mixed drink or a beer. And then after a while, once I found the right ones and found kind of my lane, I was like, all right, I can drink some of this. I did realize real quick that it's a much different sort of drunk for me than other types of alcohol. Because the hard alcohol, it'll be, oh my God, this is the best thing ever. And then I'll be miserable or pissed. One or the other. but this and beer for me is just kind of, you know, I can always feel it coming on so I can know when to taper off sort of thing.
Yeah. And that's the thing, like I had to learn about wine, mm-hmm. especially with the white wines and and especially with, like, say, for instance, Rieslings.
Oh, yeah. You drink that dessert wine, and that is like sugar water. And so you just drink it, drink it, drink it, and then you're in for bad, you know, you're in bad shape because then you have all of that sugar and all of that dehydration going on with that alcohol, and you're feeling bad.
Well, that, and that's why you got to sip slow.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't sip slow, you're going to be in trouble.
Or you get that sour stomach.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm not trying to have that.
Nah. Like I had the old sour stomach back in the day drinking some Mike's. You know,
oh, really?
thinking I was real tough drinking some Mike's Hard Lemonade and was like, I'll have five or six of these and then go throw up in the bushes because it's too sour for my stomach.
Mike's Hard Lemonade. Remember when that used to be a major thing somehow Red's Apple Ale took over for it?
Yeah, it just, it really did. And, you know, I used to also do the Smirnoff Ice, and that was when I was really feeling fancy.
And now, when you did the Smirnoff Ice, did you put like a Jolly Rancher in it?
I wish I would have. That would have made it maybe a little better.
Or I'm trying to remember, what was the other like malt drink in that vein?
Well, God, they used to have like a Jack Daniels drink in a malt liquor like that.
Yeah, I remember that. Zima.
Zima.
Yes, I remember many in my college days. Many a young lady putting a Jolly Rancher in there and so they could enhance the taste. And I'm just like, it enhances nothing. The only thing it enhances is your beer goggles.
That's yes. It enhances your stupidity, maybe.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, with that, let's go ahead and start with our 1989 film, our first film, one of the early films from Jean-Claude Van Damme. It is Kickboxer.
A champion from the West.
Now that you've beaten everyone there is to beat, what's next?
A legend of the East. A competition that went too far.
No! That's my brother! No!
Your brother is paralyzed. He can never walk again.
He's going to pay for this.
The only way you'll find him is inside the ring, and you are not good enough!
I'll get him.
Now, an untested challenger seeks an unwilling master.
May I help you?
Uncle Zian's going to teach you. My uncle does not teach anyone anymore.
I'm telling you, man, he's greater than a three-headed cat.
You fight before?
Yeah, I'm good.
A strength different in America. Your defense stinks.
To learn the art of an ancient combat.
You must learn to be faster than any punch or kick.
A combat where to survive, you must destroy.
Do not let your emotion control you if you want to be warrior.
Different culture, different world.
They will fight the ancient way. Just listen. With your mind, your heart, your whole being.
I win that fight for you.
For honor, for love, for justice, Jean-Claude Van Damme, the power of a warrior, the heart of a champion, Kickboxer.
And the IMDb plot synopsis of the film goes like this. Kurt Sloan is the corner man for his brother, U.S. kickboxing champion Eric Sloan. When Kurt witnesses his brother become maliciously paralyzed in the ring by Thailand champion Tong Po, Kurt vows revenge. With the help of Zion, a kickboxing trainer who lives in a remote area of Thailand, Kurt trains for the fight of his life. All right, Sean, so why don't you tell me about you and Kickboxer and JCVD in general, the actor, not the movie. I'm going to get that a lot. I'm going to say that a lot, I feel like. But I know that for people that haven't listened to Sean talk about Bloodsport, right?
Right.
And some other wonderful 80s action films, they should definitely go back into the archives of the Black Box and check that episode out.
Well, thank you.
But tell me about you and Kickboxer specifically.
You know what? It's odd because when this came out, I remember seeing a commercial for it, and at the time, coming, you know, from a divorced household and being like 13 years old at the time, I wasn't the only one in the household that loved action movies. My family loved action movies. My mother loved action movies. And it was like one night, it was a Wednesday night. It was a school night. And my mom was like, "Hey, you want to go to the movies?" And I'm like, "It's a school night." That's the first thing that's popping in my head. It's a school night. Like, mom don't normally do this. You know what I'm saying?
Playing a trick on me.
Yeah. I'm like, what is this? Did I do something wrong? And like, what's going on? And, you know, I figured, you know, stuff must be going on. She's kind of stressed out and everything. And like, she won't go to the movie. Hey, we're going to go. All right, fine. Cool. So we see like a 9:30, 10 o'clock showing a kickboxer at the local movie theater. And, you know, and the thing about it was that I was like, oh, okay, this is that dude from Bloodsport. And I didn't see Bloodsport in the movie theater. I actually saw Bloodsport on video.
Ah.
And so, I was still like, man, this is really awesome. If I remember right, no, I did see Bloodsport in the movie theater. It was No Retreat, No Surrender that I saw on video. Like, there's like all this early Van Damme stuff is like one big blur.
Oh, but yeah, it all mushes together,
but actually I did see all those movies in the movie theater. But anyway, it was a thing of, I was like, oh man, this is this dude from Bloodsport. He's awesome. So let me see this movie. And I remember going to see it. First off, it's rated R.
Mm-hmm. Well, because you got to throw some nice little swears in there.
Oh, you got to throw some swears in, and you got to throw in some scantily clad ladies for like a minute or two and some cuss words.
When they're at that strip club.
Yeah, that's yeah.
Some of the worst dancing I've ever seen.
Oh, dude, come on, man. It's a canon film. This is like, this is a canon film. This is what you should expect. We make these films cheap. We make them quick. But here's the weird thing. This is a movie when I saw it in 89 and watching it before hopping on the podcast tonight. It still plays as a movie of two halves. Mm-hmm. There's the beginning. There's like the first 30 minutes, which just seemed like, hey, you know what? I got $10. How quick can we film all this shit?
Well, the opening ring no good, or
the opening, okay, man,
that ring,
woo, like, see, like everything about that, like that opening sequence says 80s. Mm-hmm. So hard, like the lack of, it's like, you know, man, look, just get some strings up there, make it look decent. We got to film this like in 2 hours.
Yeah, we got to be out of here by 5. Look, it is noon, we need to get going.
Yeah, we gotta go. So hurry up and film this real quick. And kickboxing was still like a new thing to America as far as it being something visually seen. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm,
like,
sure.
you know, like unlike, like say for instance, like MMA right now, like that's like embedded in our system now. So, you know, we know about it even if we don't know about it. We may not know all the names and all the weight classes, but we know what it means. But back in like the 80s, kickboxing was like, huh, what's that? And then you're also learning about like, Muay Thai, you know, which is like Thai boxing. And it's like, oh, what the fuck is that? You know, so it's kind of like, whoa, this is weird, but it's cool. But how that opening sequence is staged, like there's not a lot of speed. It's just slow. And it's just one dude getting the shit beat out of him.
Yeah, just, and this is the worst ref in the history of refs, because he's just letting this poor dude just get pounded on.
Yeah, like, I really want to know who that dude was that got pounded. Like, somebody should do an interview with that dude, like, man, you know, you just took this ass whooping and kickboxer, like, didn't, and I know Jean-Claude did all the choreography.
Oh, yeah.
Just like, sit and talk to him and say, hey, man, listen, can I at least get one or two hits in?
Can I get something blocked at least?
Yeah, no, you just, let me just take these hits. So let me take these hits in the chest. Let me take these hits in the stomach. Let me take this kick to the eye. Let me take this kick to the head. I'm like, come on, man. Brother, have a little bit of respect for yourself.
Yeah, all that guy's doing is sitting in the makeup chair. Like, that's all he's doing.
Yeah, no doubt.
He's like, all right, I just got my ass whooped. Give me some more makeup.
Yeah, and he's taking this beating from,
Dennis Alexio.
From Dennis Alexio, who plays Eric Sloan.
Yeah, and if he didn't know what his first name was, it's clearly written in marker on the front of his trunks.
Yes, yes.
I saw that and, like, what?
Yeah. And now in real life, Dennis Alexio was an American kickboxing champion. So I'm like, okay, this kind of makes sense. But like, I remember when I saw the movie in 89 and watching the movie now, the first thing that popped in my head was, I was like, man, that looked like John Oates. So I always just thought about John Oates. I'm like, man, what if John Oates was a kickboxer? Like, Hall & Oates, he was popular and he was making all his money. And like, and it was, and like, and John Oates talked about, like, for a while, he spent money on extravagant things. And, so, and he spent money on extravagant things. So maybe one of those things was like, he took like, just like kickboxing lessons, like, you know, somewhere in Thailand. And he just came back and he was Dennis Alexio.
You could have seen Hall trying to throw the towel in.
Yes. Yes. And dude just like kick it back out. But the first 30 minutes is poorly staged and poorly put together. I still, don't get me wrong, I still enjoy this movie a lot. And this movie actually is very good. It becomes good after Eric gets paralyzed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
It gets good right at that time. Once Eric gets paralyzed, it gets good. Mm-hmm. But like the biggest problem is like, it's just basically that 28, 30 minutes is all set up. It's okay. We know Van Damme is not from America, and we know that Dennis Alexio is from America, but they're brothers. So we need to have a scene to explain why Jean-Claude Van Damme's character of Kurt Sloan doesn't talk like his brother Eric. Mm-hmm. And so then you get the obligatory scene like, I live with my dad. I live with my dad in America. I live with mom overseas.
You had it easy. We had it rough too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like in that stuff, and then like the little practice training session, which take like the last 2 minutes, and Eric's telling Kurt, you know, basically quit kicking like a pussy, and and I'm like, what, huh? You're like, this is practice, and even then, like, it just the whole thing when they finally get Siam, where that's where they're going, like overseas. It was Siam, if I'm not mistaken. Then, if you notice, the music that's playing as they're traveling, so, you know, as they're traveling to go overseas, and they finally make it overseas, and they're on the boat, and you get to see all the culture and whatnot. And then after whatchamacallit gets his ass kicked by Tung Po, and he gets paralyzed, and then, you know, Van Damme is walking around like, what am I going to do with my life? It's nothing but montage music.
Yes.
And the montage music, if I'm not mistaken, for those two songs, The Streets of Siam and Fight for Love, performed by the one and only, You Got to Touch, Stan Bush.
Get out of here, Stan Bush.
Stan Bush. I'm not bullshitting you. The man who brought you Got the Touch from the original animated Transformers, the movie, gave us The Streets of Siam and Fight for Love. And they literally are montage songs.
Mm.
Basically telling you, got to advance the plot. That's all they're saying. You know what I'm saying? That's what these songs are.
One of those is definitely going to be our exit music.
Yes. Oh, and not only that, he gave us the closing credits song, Never Surrender.
Never Surrender.
Oh, yes.
God,
once again,
that's bad.
Got to tell you the plot, you know, and so that's all he does. Mm. So it makes me laugh just thinking about that. But once we get to Kurt training with he also meets Taylor.
Oh, yeah, he's got to meet Haskell Anderson.
Yeah. He meets and it's like when I remember watching this, I'm like, oh, okay, cool. It's the black dude.
It's
the black sidekick. It's very exploitationish. Mm-hmm. And he has a secret past. But he's involved, and so then you get that, and you get the obligatory, hey, we got to go to the strip club for no reason.
yeah, which, he's a walking stereotype when he's in that strip club.
Yeah.
Well, throwing money around, yelling, you know, it's like, oh man, come on.
His character is a walking stereotype until like the last act.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I just don't want to talk about the story, but like as far as the feeling of it, once you get past the first 30 minutes and you get to the training session, with Zion and Kurt and all those training sessions, it's not montage-y. It doesn't come off as montage-y. It's just, it's very, instructional. Mm-hmm. It's shot very well. The things that he has to go through to become, you know, this great Muay Thai boxer. The visuals are clear and crisp. I like how the shots are staged. There is like a lot of, hey, you know, let's do this shot like, you know, at dusk type mm-hmm. stuff. I like
oh, yeah, that magic hour stuff. Sure.
Yes. And like, you know, the thing with the eagle.
We'll get into the eagle and the listening to the histories and such.
Yes, yes. Like all that stuff is really cool. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy all of that. And come on, man. Like who can forget the classic, dance scene?
Oh boy. Yeah. We'll get into that too.
You know, we get all that, but no, like this movie, like, it got me hyped because once again, there wasn't a lot of martial arts movies in this time. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, can't remember really Steven Seagal was a thing. And like, even as like a youth, I wasn't that big into Steven Seagal. I thought he was all right, but Steven Seagal never did like spinning kicks.
Just a cook though.
Oh God.
I think that was more really early 90s. So I think it was just a couple years after this.
Yeah. So, you know, so it was a thing of, you know, like what, you know, cause like, don't get me wrong. Like I laugh and enjoy Hard to Kill. Mason Storm is Hard to Kill, but there's some shit in there. I try to watch nowadays. I'm like, man, this is bad. But like with Jean-Claude Van Damme, this was a mix of, okay, I can give you the punches. I can give you the kicks. I can do the splits. And also we didn't have a dude that could do that. So seeing him do those splits and all this other stuff, which then became part of the Jean-Claude Van Damme tradition, mm-hmm. Was really cool. Back then, nobody was doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it nowadays, the action would move a lot faster. It wouldn't be so, I can't think of the word I'm looking for. Where it's just like, oh, no, like foreshadowing every move. Like,
oh, yeah.
The moves wouldn't be as foreshadowed now as they were back then. But there's something about the last, like, hour and 7 minutes of this film I truly enjoy because it's also a film about friendships. And I really like the relationship between Kurt and Zeon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that is what makes the movie. And I was kind of surprised by a couple of things that I'd forgotten about. Like, isn't it Miley?
I think so, yes.
I think that's how you say that. But I was surprised at some aspects of her storyline that I'd forgotten about.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see this in the theater. I think this was one where I saw it on USA. Or one of those sort of basic cable networks. Because yes. I remember seeing this and Bloodsport. And Lionheart, and never being able to remember which one was which. And I was like, all right, is it the one where he's in the pool fighting the guy, or is he fighting the bigger dude, or is he fighting the crazy guy with the ponytail?
Right.
You know, those were the three, those are the ways that I tried to distinguish them. For this one, this is the one that I've seen the most out of those. And I, you know, had some notes that were, you know, silly at the beginning, you know, with the way that Dennis Alexio looks with his Jerry curl mullet, his Soul Glow mullet that he's got going on. Mm-hmm. I did like when he was getting ready to go out and they actually let him move quickly. And he, you know, because Van Damme saying, you know, this guy's no joke. I saw him kicking this pillar. Like, you better watch your ass. And he's like, you know, and he moves around and starts dodging. And I'm like, oh, okay, shit. This guy's the real stuff. And I had pulled my phone out and was like, oh, okay, this guy actually was, you know, a legitimate kickboxer.
Yes.
And so I was like, oh, well, thank goodness. And then I kind of watched the choreography and I kind of think like, oh, dang, this is a little before its time in that they weren't allowed to do the sort of post Jason Bourne's sort of speed with the fighting.
Right, right. Yes, yes.
You know, where everything had to be very telegraphed.
Yeah, because it's new. Mm-hmm. Like, this is new. And also, man, like, man, somebody could get hurt.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Even with all the experts in the world, back then, because it was so new, you know, hey, man, somebody could easily get kicked in the face.
Mm-hmm. And what was funny is, one of the lines that I caught was, you know, they asked about Kurt. They're interviewing Eric and they ask about Kurt and he says, oh, my brother, he's going to be a vet or a lawyer. And I'm like, where's the spinoff movie that Eric beats Tong Po? And it's just Kurt Sloan lawyer. Or Kurt Sloan the vet.
Yeah, yeah.
It's... like, what a joke.
Oh, man, it is. I like how they try to, that's like just a quick sway. It's like, oh, no, we're just going to sway you into believing that, hey, man, this Kurt Sloan dude is nothing.
Yeah, he's just a normal guy.
Yeah, normal my ass. Like, the dude is ripped. Mm-hmm. How many, like, normal dudes are ripped like a freaking action figure?
Right. So we see, you know, we get the introduction of Tong Po that I mentioned earlier. And, you know, at the time I put, man, I can't wait for Tong Po to fuck this guy up.
And he did, too. Like, he did. And he did it. And, like, and the thing is, what cracked me up was, because I'm like, man, I'm like, somebody must have watched Rocky IV. Before putting this together. And the thing that cracked me up the most, and I actually rewound this a couple of times, because I'm like, he did not just say that. When he was getting his ass kicked, and Kurt was like, look, Eric, look, man, just stop, man. Just, this dude's fighting dirty. Don't, come on, man. Let's just go. Let's go home. We go home. And Eric's like, oh, you want a street fight? I'll give him a street fight. Man, he stepped back out there and got his ass whooped. Yeah. No, he didn't even throw a damn punch.
Yeah, he just walked out there, didn't even, like, protect himself. And...
Right. You know, it was just, it's so stupid. And then also, again, the slow setup for when he breaks his, you know. Oh, yeah,
he's just sitting there in plank. You know, just in plank position, just waiting to get his back broken.
Yeah. So, get me past all of that, and then the rest of the movie is great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I put, you know, that Kurt is the worst corner man I've ever seen. He doesn't prep him at all. You know, he doesn't do any of the work to where it's like, hey, here's the style this guy is going to be fighting in months ahead of time.
Right.
So it's like, hey, dude, this guy is scary, like, right before we go out. Maybe we shouldn't do it.
You know, not only that, but it's weird, because once again, it's a canon film. So sometimes some things, like, I don't know, length of time. Length of time is something that kind of just gets kicked over in the corner. When like, you know, the sports reporters are asking Eric, hey, you know, so you're beating all the best people in the States. You know, have you heard about going overseas to fight? And so he's like, I'll fight anybody anytime. I'll take this belt with me, blah, blah, blah. And then they're overseas, and I'm like, how long did this take? What's the length of time?
Next day, just said, hey, let's go.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what it comes off like. Man, I just fought this fight today. Man, you want to fight this Tong Po dude overseas? When? Tomorrow, 5 o'clock? Okay, cool, let's go. And so, but like, you just have to suspend belief and just say, okay, it took a little while to get things set up, and come to find out this is all dirty anyway. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's, so that is kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, this film was like directed by, I think, like Mark DeSalle and David Wirth, but it was produced by Mark DeSalle. And Mark DeSalle,
he was also a story writer, yeah.
Yes, with Jean-Claude.
Mm-hmm.
Because Jean-Claude helped write this story too. But Mark DeSalle also produced Bloodsport.
Okay.
And he also produced, like, I think, like another Van Damme film as well. But he also produced, like, some When America Was Desperate for another martial arts legend, or at least a self-made one, a studio-made martial arts legend. He, granted, this dude was in real life a pretty good martial artist, but he made bad films. Jeff Speakman. He made a movie for, I think, Paramount called The Perfect Weapon, which did not have a perfect opening at the box office. And then he did a film for Canon that nobody heard of. But like, Mark DeSalle was like early in Van Damme's career with Canon. Like DeSalle was about that life.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, we have, in a lot of ways, we have DeSalle to thank for bringing Van Damme, and also Canon for bringing Van Damme to the forefront, because it's kind of like Kickboxer was done on the cheap. I think Kickboxer had, like, I don't know, maybe a $2 million budget. And like, say for instance, Bloodsport, man, I've read things that, like, Bloodsport cost as low as $1 million and as high and maybe as much as like $2 million.
Hmm.
And like, Bloodsport made, like, I think $65 million worldwide.
Wow.
So, So like a lot of the early Van Damme stuff, and this will also be reflective when we talk about the next movie. Like, this dude did these movies, like, he didn't give, he got paid pennies. And I hope he got some money on the back end for this stuff because Cannon was shady. Mm. So I hope he, I mean, yes, it led to bigger movies and actual legitimate paydays for Van Damme, but the work he does in Kickboxer, Bloodsport, and like his early films, man, like that is, you know, $5 million, $10 million work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a $5 million, $10 million paycheck, and he's doing it for pennies.
And this is, this was listed at $1.5 million was the estimation.
Mm.
And it made $14.5 million.
Yes.
For this one, which, you know, you're going to get some diminishing returns when it's almost the exact same type of setup.
Yeah, and it does. It definitely has a setup familiar to Bloodsport for sure.
Successful guy, buddy gets hurt, beats the bad guy.
Yes.
Yeah. And then here it's, oh, average Joe, brother gets paralyzed, beats the bad guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I do want to, I mean, we mentioned him already, but Tong Po, for me, was scary as hell.
Yes.
You know, this is 89, so I'm like 10 years old, 11 years old, depending on when I saw it. And I didn't want any part of Tong Po. No. I was like, woo, that is a scary looking dude. And his teeth are all jacked up and he's doing all this dirty fighting and he's got his hands all in the glass. I was I want nothing to do with him.
And then he licks the glass.
Oh yeah, ooh, I didn't like that.
Like, is it me, or did this dude, like, look like Goro from Mortal Kombat without four arms?
Yes, he did.
You know what I mean?
He did, yes.
And what I didn't know was, like, when I watched this movie tonight, and when you watch the credits, and when that Stan Bush Never Surrender song starts playing, and you turn down the volume, it lists Tong Po, like, all the characters. It's like, you know, Jean-Claude Van Damme as Kurt Sloan. It's like, Tong Po as himself. And I'm like, that's not his real name.
Yeah. Oh, poor Michael.
Yeah, like, that's not his real name. So yeah, I was like, that's fucked up. Like, see, pure canon. Like, that is canon in all of its heavenly glory. And in the production company that put this together. Like, no fucks are given. It's like, hey, what's Tong Po's name? You don't know? Can we pick up a phone call? Wait a minute, we don't have any long distance right now? We're behind? Fuck it. That's his real name.
Mm-hmm. It's Michael Kissy.
Yes.
Say his name. Is that how you say it?
Yes.
All right, we'll go with that. Yeah, he's a scary dude. I mean, and then he, of course, was in Bloodsport and Lionheart, and he was in Kickboxer 2. You can't forget about that classic.
Well,
Sasha Mitchell.
Sasha Mitchell. Yes. The was, as like my one friend used to call him, the Say Duh Kid. What was that? Susan Summers sitcom with Patrick Duffy, Step by Step.
Step by Step. Yep.
Yeah, he was just like, I'll play this dumb dude, but I can actually do karate. Mm-hmm. And so you get that obligatory ABC episode of Step by Step where you get to see him do karate. I'm like, yo, man, I already saw this already. Urkel did it.
Right. Right. Oh yeah. So Kickboxer, I really do enjoy it. One of the things that I agree with it. Once they get into Thailand and they start, you know, doing all of his training and all that sort of stuff is when it really starts to start finding its groove. And I will say that kicking of the tree, that shit is no joke. Like that gets me squeamish every damn time he's kicking that tree.
Yes.
And I do not like the makeup and the bruises and the blood that they put on his leg because that was making me flinch and making me squeamish when I was watching this last night. And I was like, I better watch it, I guess. You know?
Yeah, the sound effects. The sound effects.
And,
yeah, that.
You know, Van Damme gets a lot of shit for all of his screaming and his crazy facial expressions, but when he's losing his mind and injuring himself, I was like, oh, god damn, just tell him to quit doing that.
Yeah, man. Oof. Yeah, I'm like, please stop, please stop. And then when he finally, like, cracked it and he just fell down and started screaming. And Zeon just walked away. He's like, yeah, he got it now. He got it.
Yeah,
he's
especially because it's like, well, apparently this fight is like 3 years away to heal his broken leg.
Yeah, see, once again, where is the, like, what is, how, what's the time frame?
Mm-hmm.
Because even when Taylor drops him off, He's like, yeah, I'll be back in a couple of days to come get you. And I'm like, hold on, you're not going to be ready for this fight in a couple of days. And at the same time, they said that his brother is going to be in the hospital for 3 months. So I'm like, okay, so 3 months must have passed.
Mm-hmm.
3 months must have passed. And then we got the fight, the practice, what I like to call the practice fight. And Jean-Claude whooped that dude's ass. And then like they start calling him Nuxu Cao, or the White Warrior, as Jean-Claude says.
Well, because that's what you do after one fight. You give him a tag. Yep. And you start chanting his name.
Yes. And then he looked up at that Freddie Lee dude and was just like, I want Tong Po. Mm. And then he shook his head, like, and Freddie Lee shook his head like, okay, you shall have him. And then all the shadiness happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's talk about the shadiness. Okay, so I don't remember that part of the movie, I guess. And like I said, this is the one that I had seen the most. Now, granted, I haven't seen it in many, many years. But I remembered... I just don't recall her getting raped. And I was like, whoa, what the hell?
Yeah, that I remember. I remember when I saw that, because here's the thing. Because even my mom was like, well, I didn't expect this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, say for instance, yes, it's an R-rated film. It's an R-rated film, but you know, but at the same time, it's one of those things of like it still caught my mom off guard on something. She's like, oh, that's right, it's rated R. But like when the rape scene came in, and my mom was like, damn, they have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
They have to do that. I was like, well, they're bad guys, and this is what bad guys do. And so, and she was like, still, they have to do that. But she was happy when for instance, like then they came after Kurt's brother,
mm-hmm.
and Kurt, you know, tried to whoop some butt. But when the dude threw the knife at the dog,
oh no!
Woo! Folks in the audience was heated.
A lot of mumbling and grumbling.
Oh yeah, I'm like, they just whooped a dude in the wheelchairs. They just whooped a dude that was in a wheelchair. Yeah, and don't get me wrong, I was salty. I'm like, man, how you gonna like hit the dog like that? And, you know, with a knife. But this, that also became the shining turning moment for Taylor when Van Damme was like, look, man, I'm going to need your help. You got to go find my brother. And, like, you know, and Taylor's like, I don't want nothing to do with this. I don't want to go back to that life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but he does, and he becomes Black Rambo. And, you know, and he gets his own scene. And I like how that was shot, like, with the shadow. He's coming out of the shadow. He's got, like, his military gear on. And all this other stuff, like that was cool. And him and Zeon helped break Kurt's brother free, and also the dog ended up being okay.
Yeah.
There was a lot of shadiness, So like the whole thing with like, and also more foreshadowing, because we knew this wasn't going to work. Like you know that Freddie Lee dude talks to this like crime boss or whatever. Is like, yo, I need $1 million to bet on Tong Po so I can get this paper, and you can have some paper. And I'm like, you know this ain't gonna work, right? So there's that. But also, I think the thing that kind of got me a little bit the more I think about it, because yeah, they got into Kurt's head, but when Taylor wasn't gonna have anything to do with it, he was just gonna take the dog and Zeon to the vet, and that was it. He wasn't gonna try to like help get Kurt's brother, because once again, we also got that that whole first 30 minutes is basically, let me explain who I am, what I do, and what I used to do, and what I can do. Mm-hmm. And that's how we find out about Taylor's military past, and how he could find guns and weapons and tanks and planes, and you know, you need it, he could go get it. He won't be part of that life no more. And so he's about to drive Zeon and his dog to the vet. And Miley comes up to the window and said, listen, you got to help Kurt. I didn't tell Kurt I got raped.
Mm-hmm.
Because Kurt needs his mind clear for this fight. Because Zeon knew about it, and Zeon didn't tell Kurt about it. But she was like, I need his mind clear for the rape. I mean, not for the rape, but for the fight. See, it's kind of fucked up. I'm like, damn, that's really fucked up. But it also made Taylor say, okay, well, you know what? I need to do my part.
Well, and see, here's the thing. Like, okay, they have the handicapped brother, the dog, the girlfriend that gets raped. It's like, how many things do you need to pile on to this guy to have it be a satisfying conclusion that the guy gets his ass kicked?
Right, right, you know? Exactly.
It seems like they got into it and they're like, oh shit, we need something for Taylor to do. Maybe we should invent some other shit. But, and so we have all of this stuff, you know, the dog's okay, the brother gets saved, the old dude gets, you know, his, the hook in the dude's groin to, and this one's for Mai Lee, you know, and all that stuff. But she doesn't get shit, and she's so completely well adjusted from being raped not too long ago.
Yeah, that's really weird.
And it's just kind of like, oh, that's a female deal. This is like an all dudes sort of a movie. We won't worry about that stuff, is the way that it came across to me. And I was like, ooh, I don't like that.
Well, no, but that's how a lot of films were in like the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I was just like, whoa, because like I said, I didn't really recall that. And then especially once, you know, Tong Po's fucking him up and he's bleeding all over and he's like, you bleed like Mai Lee. And I was like, oh, Jesus.
Yeah, man.
Like they are bringing that back again. Like, wow, that is messed up.
Extremely messed up. And it's foul. It's foul. Although I will say what was funny though was when Kurt saw his brother and Zion and Taylor come in and his brother is saying the whole Nuxu Cow thing and, oh, you know, all this other stuff. So now Van Damme's like, I'm good. He's like, and he tells Mai Lee, hey, cut these ropes off. I don't need this shit. I'm about to go whoop this dude's ass. When he starts to whoop this dude's butt and he does like this, like double or triple kick where this type of kick where Van Damme stands still and he just like whoops his like leg back and forth.
Yeah, the back and forth stuff. Like, and like a Three Stooges thing.
Yes. And it cuts to the dog watching the kicks. And I swear they shoot it or like take the film and do it in a way where like the dog is like turning his head back forth, like, or side to side. Like that shit had me rolling. Had me rolling.
Yes. I did see that as well. And I also, I thought that was funny. I also like, apparently he just started hulking out or.
Yeah.
Or he pulled out the old the sword and he became He-Man all of a sudden, or what the fuck? Because I was like, oh, I'm getting my ass kicked, but you know, I had him at any point. I just needed to make sure that everyone was okay, because if they weren't okay and they were going to be killed, then I was just going to tank this fight.
Right.
But I could beat his ass at any time. And I was like, well, what the fuck? You know?
It is odd. I mean, it is odd.
Poor Tong Po, you know, he's just been just owning people the entire time. And as soon as Sloane starts hulking out, he doesn't even get a shot in.
Nope. But the thing is, but see, once again, it's also that thing of all you've seen this whole film is Tong Po just beat the shit out of people. So yeah, there's no more moves. He's had all of his big boss power-ups. you know what I mean? He's done. And so now, you know, Jean-Claude has the game genie. It's over.
Oh, the game genie. You know, I got the game genie and my mom got it for me for my birthday. And it was right when that was brand new, right?
Yes.
And I tried getting it to work and I didn't have it like all the way on one side. And I was so pissed because I didn't think it worked. And I was like, oh, this thing sucks. This thing's so cheap. And my mom's like, it is not cheap, and gave me a good whap. And I was like, I was like, whoa, oh, it's not on all the way. Oh, it's working. I was like, holy shit. That was the old impetuous youth there that got showed what was what.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, man.
Before moving on, we should definitely talk about the dance in the drunken dance sequence. First of all, what in the world is he wearing in these movies?
Look, man, it was the 80s. They didn't have a big budget. Anything that they could find, if it was on sale, just put it on.
He's got these overall clip-on suspender singlet thing.
Yes.
That is the worst looking top. And he's got these baggy khakis.
Yes. Well, see, the baggy khakis, though, leaves for flexibility so he can do all them crazy kicks and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I still don't know what that shirt with the suspender clips are doing. I don't know what that's doing. I don't. Like, I don't know what that is. But it's like, but for Cannon, it's like, hey, showing off the muscles.
Yeah, I guess so. Now, and the dance is a very famous internet meme by now.
Yes.
But I do think it is worth noting that he is supposed to be drunk while he's dancing. Right? Mm-hmm. And boy, does he look uncomfortable. I mean, that's the most uncomfortable and least coordinated I've ever seen a gentleman that is so very coordinated in my life.
Well, the dude can dance. Seriously, like straight up, the dude can dance in real life. So seeing that kind of made me laugh a bit, because people forget, like, this dude was like an extra in Breaking.
Mm-hmm.
And he can legit dance. So seeing that, like, I didn't know that back then. I just saw this. Well, I remember when I seen this in 89, and I just started laughing. I'm like, what is this dude doing? And who's playing this generic-ass James Brown song?
And, right.
You know, and so they're like, hey, let's mix it up. Because basically, once again, it's one of those tests from Zeon. It's one of those tests. He's like, let me get this dude drunk. Let me see if he can still fight. And he beats the shit out of everybody. And we get a couple of slow-mo shots. And, but no, that dancing was just, whew. But yeah, it became a meme. And also, he, like, performed that dance. I forget which late night talk show it was for. But, maybe Conan, maybe? Mm-hmm. But, like, but he redid it. Like, he reenacted that dance to a T.
Oof, that is amazing.
Yeah, that's the power of Van Damme, man.
Okay, so before we move on to our second film, a much, much different film, I want to talk about something that I didn't know about, and I wonder if you know about. What do you know about Kickboxer Vengeance?
Say what?
Kickboxer Vengeance, releasing in 2016... with Jean-Claude Van Damme as Master Durand, who is the trainer, and Dave Bautista as Tong Po.
Oh, and it also has Gina Carano in
Gina
it, too.
Gina Carano, yes.
Huh, now, here's the question. Because, like, some stuff with Gina Carano goes straight to video if she's the star.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, Dave Bautista now is legit.
Mm-hmm.
With Guardians of the Galaxy and his appearance in Spectre, he is legitimate now. Those are like those two names. Yeah, I get that. And Jean-Claude Van Damme. Yeah, he doesn't. His movies don't make it to the cinema anymore. Unless it was like Expendables 2, which I still enjoy to this day because everybody was in on the joke.
Mm-hmm.
But it's weird. Wow, this is kind of weird. Like this is essentially a remake.
Kind of, yeah. Kind
because of. There's an Eric Sloan, there's mm-hmm. a Kurt Sloan,
mm-hmm.
There's Tom Poe.
And it's Marcia is what Gina Carano plays.
Right.
So I'm not exactly sure what that would be.
And see,
I'm assuming it's the love interest. And what's interesting is I don't know who either of the Sloans are. I don't know if they're guys that are just, you know, MMA guys or kickboxing guys in real life. That they're trying to give a break to, or what exactly?
Well, like, I know that Alain Moussey's done, like, a lot of stunt work.
Okay.
He's done a lot of stunt work, so this is probably, like, his first,
his first shot, huh?
His first shot. And so, now let's see here. Now, as far as Darren Chalavi goes, he has no biography. So
must be another stunt guy, maybe. I mean, my apologies if it's not correct, but that would be my assumption.
This seriously, this might be his like. I'm sorry. Let me double check. Let me click his name right here. Nope, I take that back. He's actually had acting work, like just playing like little roles here and there, and he's been working since nonstop since 1991.
Oh wow.
Yeah, he's been working since the age of 7. He's 42 years old.
Hmm.
So,
I guess his role is just to get killed at the beginning, so.
Yeah, he started his career in Hong Kong.
Oh, wow.
As an actor and a stunt double. And so yeah, he's been working. So yeah, I don't know what this is going to be. I don't know if this is going to be something that's going to be direct to video or direct to streaming or if this is actually going to make the movie theater.
It is $17 million.
Well, but here's the thing though, man, like a lot of this, like that's still, that might be a limited release.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if you're going to go full blown release with it.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to go head to head with all with 2016's summer of sequels and franchises.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do with this. I'm not sure. Like, I'm glad you brought this to my attention because I did not know that this was a thing.
Yeah, I'm a little I'm cautious, but I don't know. I would go see JCVD and Batista and Gina Carano and. I mean, if the stunt guy, the main guy is a stunt guy, you should expect all of the fighting to be good.
Yes.
You know, so I don't know. I think it could be interesting, at least as just a throwback to the 80s kind of a film.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. We'll see. All right. Is there anything else about Kickboxer that you wanted to mention before we move on?
The film actually holds up.
Sorry to interrupt you, but I guess I didn't mention that, but I do think it's good. Like, I had a great time watching it again.
Yeah, so did I. Like I said, I've made jokes about the first 30 minutes, but in all seriousness, I do feel that this movie is strong, and for me, it does hold up as a cult classic.
Mm-hmm.
It really does. It's definitely a cult film for sure. If you ask me which do I like more, Bloodsport or Kickboxer, I probably still go Bloodsport.
Yeah, you gotta go Bloodsport. I wanted to talk about Kickboxer because first of all, you guys didn't mention it when you were going through Jean-Claude. And I just think Tong Po is such a strong visual, even though a lot of it is makeup on the actor.
Mm-hmm.
To make him more Asian, it says. I do think that is such a stunning visual, and it's the goddamn walk and the Muay Thai pose that just fucking freaked me out. I just hated that.
Yes.
You know, he's just like sort of staggering towards you with his arms up. It's like, well, just kick him in the stomach. That's what I always kept thinking when I was a little kid. Just kick him. He's just sitting there with his arms up, you know? Mm-hmm. We did also forget to mention the hawk with its tongue very much out.
Oh, okay. Yes, yes.
And listening to the ancestors and all that. That was a thing where I was like, oh, yeah, it's like he's got the spirit of the animals. It's like a Native American sort of deal. Like, you know, he's got the strength of his forebears and all this. And I remember that going into the film and watching it this time. I'm like, oh, okay, I guess I can sort of buy into what they're doing there. But when you're seeing like some samurai and stuff fighting, and mm-hmm. it's real quick. I'm like, I don't know. Like that's not developed that much to where that was kind of a missed opportunity, I guess, for me. I think the location's beautiful and I love seeing it, but I was like, story wise, I was like, I don't know how much this really had to do with it.
Yeah, I know. And like I said, in old school, like cheap filmmaking fashion. It's like, hey, we got some outfits that we can make work for this real quick. Okay, put it in there. Go. Make a fight. samurai fight, you know, or not samurai fight, but like, you know, just like a act of war. Like,
yeah.
An art of war style of fight.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was all, but I still dug it though. I still dug it. And like, I think this is the thing for me. This is why like I have such a, this is why I enjoy like a lot of the canon film stuff, because they were like, you know, the cast that ran canon films, Globus and, I forget the other person's name. They were just nuts and they made movies. They were the complete opposite of everything Hollywood was. And they just broke down the doors and said, fuck it. We're making movies. And we're doing things the way we want to do them, good, bad, or indifferent. And for every hit they had, they have a flop. But they always took chances to the point to where, like, you know, it pretty much just killed the company. But, like, in their catalog, there's a lot of garbage, but there's really a lot of great stuff in there, too.
Mm.
And so, like, I really give them props, like, because it's easy to shit on canon films. It's so easy to shit on canon films, but... They also started a lot of people's careers too.
Yeah, you can say the same sort of thing with canon as you can with Van Damme. You know, there's a lot of shit And there's a lot of like, what is this? But then there's a lot of good movies in there. Like, you know, we were talking about these two that are very similar. I think Bloodsport and Kickboxer are good. I think Lionheart is a lesser version, you know, a little more street version, I guess. Universal Soldier, I think, is a good movie. For what it's trying to be, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he's got some other films that are worth just throwing in and watching and are fun. And then he's got some that I wouldn't want to watch ever again.
Right. Know? Oh yeah.
But yeah, so, okay. So before we move on to our next film, I should mention that Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook of your choice and a free 30-day trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/plainlabelpodcast and choose from over 180,000 audio programs. Download a title for free and start listening. It's that easy. Go to audibletrial.com/plainlabelpodcast and get started today. And our second film is from 2008, and it is JCVD.
Okay, thank you.
Donc à ce moment-là, vous lui...
Camera ready.
Vous êtes gars juste avant de dire...
Vous êtes Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Well, it's not easy to get a good script those days.
Let's shoot a movie together.
I'll bring the emotion, you bring the action.
Tout est neutral. Il y a des gens qui n'ont pas réussi parce qu'ils ne sont pas aware. Je suis aware, aware, je suis aware.
Photo là pour le vidéoclub.
Yeah.
I'm 47 years old. It's way too much, my friend.
Le fait de ne pas utiliser votre arme à feu symbolise la pureté du personnage.
Jean-Claude, kick your ass, kick his 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 ass.
His entire career, Your Honor, is involved with films that no responsible parent would ever expose their children to. Strangulation, crushed under the wheels, laceration, crushed skull, asphyxiation.
One more.
Would you rather live with your mommy or your daddy?
Every time my dad is on a TV show, my friends make fun of me.
If you want me to make the appeal, you've got to pay my fees.
Call the producers and y'all tell them I need some money up front.
Ouais, bon dame. J'attends un virement postal.
Désolé, mais nous n'avons pas de liquidité aujourd'hui.
Je veux le pognon ! J'ai pas de cash sur moi ! Jean-Claude Van Damme sans cash !
Caméra ? Caméra ? Oh, caméra cachée.
Ne la prenez pas celle-là, c'est pas une bonne flic. Des...
Oh ! Putain ! Là, je te dis !
Vous devinerez jamais qui a braqué la poste.
Qui ?
Qu'est-ce que tu es en train de faire, mon fils?
Toi, t'as gagné. Moi, j'ai perdu.
Attendez, à ma grand-mère qui vous aime bien aussi, s'il vous plaît, je l'adore.
5 minutes.
And the IMDb plot synopsis for this film goes like this. Between his tax problems and his legal battle with his wife for the custody of his daughter, these are hard times for the action movie star who finds that even Steven Seagal has stolen a role from him. In JCVD, Jean-Claude Van Damme returns to the country of his birth to seek the peace and tranquility he can no longer enjoy in the United States. Okay, so, Mr. Pryor, tell me about you in this film. When did you hear about this? Because this is, you know, this is very clearly on the downward side of Van Damme's career. This is, you know, he had sort of fallen off of, you know, he'd sort of been a direct-to-DVD kind of a guy, and, you know, not been... The sort of style of films that he makes wasn't in vogue anymore. So how did you hear about this, and when did you first see it, and what did you think of it, and that sort of thing?
I first heard about this in 2008, via the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And like film nerds and geeks were talking about how like awesome this movie is, and like, and it's Jean-Claude Van Damme as you've never seen him before, and it's not your stereotype, it's not your typical Van Damme movie. And you know sometimes how geeks and nerds get, they'll hype something so much that
love the hyperbole, yes.
Yeah, man. They'll hype it so much I'm just like, I really don't believe you, because so many of you are in this generation of shut up and take my money without looking at the bigger picture. And so I was just like, I'm not really sure if this is going to be any good or not. So, but I was curious. I was curious. So I was like, you know what? If it pops around my neighborhood, I'll check it on a matinee. It never did. As far as I can remember. So it became something that was out of sight, out of mind. And I always wanted to watch it, but it was always out of sight, out of mind. So when you say, when you tell me, hey, we're going to do it for this podcast, I was like, okay, cool. So I rented it from Amazon. It was actually also on YouTube.
Yeah.
It's
on Hulu Plus too.
Oh, it's on Hulu Plus as well? Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. I rented it from Amazon because it also had the subtitles, because when I saw it on YouTube, there was no subtitles.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
There were no subtitles. And like, I was like, nah, I'm gonna give Van Damme this bread. Let me give Van Damme this bread. So it was like $2 rental on Amazon. And I started watching it. And I kind of wish I'd have saw it when this came out.
Wait a minute. So wait, this was I brought this to you is what you're telling me.
Yeah, you brought this to me.
What?
Yeah, man.
Mister,
yeah,
because I see all of the movies that Eric brings to me.
No, like this was one that seriously, when it dropped, it didn't come around and I never got back to it.
Wow.
It's just on that long list.
Okay, so you should have seen it in the theater. Expound upon that. What do you mean by that?
Because like, yeah, this is something that you can watch on a TV. This is something that you can watch on your computer. But like, I think being able to see it in a movie theater, it would have brought more intimacy to the viewing of the film.
And the scene, right?
In the scene. Yes.
Yeah. We'll talk about the scene because that's essentially the entire 97 minutes is made for the one scene.
Yes. And we definitely got to talk about that. Yeah. But the cool thing that I liked about when the film opens, it opens on a shoot.
Mm-hmm.
And he's doing his moves, and this is all one take.
Yes.
This is all one take. But the cool thing about it is that like there are mistakes, there are flubs, and Jean-Claude is also showing his age.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I thought that was really cool. But then you go through all that, and then at the end of the shot, things don't go how they're supposed to go. And
yeah, the set wall falls down.
Yes. And it becomes a thing of Van Damme is like, listen, you want me to, like, he's talking to the director who was, let's see here, because I don't want to get the ethnicity mixed up. Hold on one second, because, like, I'm not going to be the one to say it's this ethnicity and be like, nah, man, you just think they all look alike.
Mm.
I'm not going to be that dude. I'm not going to be that dude. I want to say it was, if I'm not mistaken, it was a Chinese director and he had an assistant. But Jean-Claude goes up to the Chinese director who is not really giving one fuck about this.
Oh, yeah. He's upset that he doesn't have his Hollywood picture and he's throwing those darts at the Hollywood sign.
Yes. And Jean-Claude, who takes his work seriously, no matter what the production, he takes his work seriously. He's like, listen, at my age, we're going to do this all in one take. Things have to be like this. And the director's paying no attention to him. And like, and he had said in subtitles, like, just because this dude helped bring John Woo to the forefront doesn't mean he could talk to me like whatever. Mm-hmm. And basically the lady translates it for him as something, translates it to Jean-Claude as something else. And Jean-Claude's just fed up. But that opening sequence, I think, honestly, Jean-Claude may have just felt, even though I know it's just a movie, it also, I think, sums up his career since 1999.
Mm.
Because he hadn't had a theatrical release since 1999, which was Universal Soldier: The Return.
Yeah.
And so, and like I said, yeah, he ended up in Expendables 2, but that was a couple years later. which still has one of the greatest lines of all time, said by Jean-Claude Van Damme. This is the symbol of the goat. But I love Expendables 2. Anyway, but you know, so he hadn't been in he wasn't in a feature film for like the longest time. He just did direct-to-video stuff and direct-to-streaming stuff. And literally, it's like, man, Jean-Claude is back where he used to be, how he originally started, just doing cheap movies and just getting money however he can. But it's not the same. Because in the beginning, he made those quote unquote sacrifices to get the big payday.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And now it's just, oh, fuck, I'm just doing this so I can get a check. But he's like, but I still care. I still care about the work I do, but I need this money.
Yeah. Now he's got actual life problems, right? Like he's got his tax evasion. He's got his custody battles. He's got real world issues. He's asking for advances on scripts or on films. You know, it's not the double impact, sudden death, hard target sort of era of Van Damme.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Right? Exactly. And not only that, though, but it's also a thing of, it's dealing with, like, this movie deals with a lot of things, not just the whole, you know, Jean-Claude Van Damme is like, you know, he's older. So you're dealing with ageism in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
You're also dealing with, it's not that like he comes off as delusional. He's just like, man, what the fuck happened? And like he had this career and he's talking with his agent and he's literally talking about in that scene with the agent and the camera's just focused on Van Damme. And he's like, look, man, look, I know how we used to do this shit way back when. And now basically I'm getting what I used to get way back when before I became famous. And I know how this goes. It's a $6 million movie. I'm only going to get this, and only this is going to be seen. And his agent's like, well, hey, man, the money's money. Just take the money. And, like, Van Damme's like, I just want to be fucking respected. Get me in front of a studio.
Yeah, where he had said, look, I'll just work for scale. I'll just work for, you know, the Hollywood minimum and just get me on a theatrical release.
Yeah, yeah. He just wanted to be back on a cinema screen.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't matter what it took. Just get me back on a cinema screen. And like the agent's like, yo, man, don't you like this money though?
What I think is so funny is the way that I came to this movie is, you know, I was listening to podcasts and listening to movie reviews and, you know, just kind of doing that sort of thing around this time. And, you know, it was early on in the podcasting world. I think it was around 2010 when I finally got around to it. And I'd heard someone say that I trusted that you got to see JCVD. Van Damme is so good. He should have got an Oscar nom. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, get out of it. Like, what are you talking about? And they're like, no, seriously. Like, he's very, very good in it. I was like, really? Like, Bloodsport Van Damme? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, well, you know, I'll throw that on my Netflix queue and give it a shot. And I watched it. And other than the one sequence, I was like, okay, you know, that's all right. Yeah. You know, and it was just kind of like, well, that's a middle of the road. That's a 3 out of 5 star for me. And I didn't think much of it. And, you know, at that time, when I first watched it, didn't have a mortgage, wasn't married for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't have a child, you know, I was a grown up and I had responsibilities, but not the way that I do now.
Right.
Yeah. You know, so I watched this again today and absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
And identified with it in much bigger ways. You know, the sequence that we'll talk about, I watched twice. The long take at the very beginning made me chuckle and made me look up immediately when Children of Men had come out, and that was 06. And so I'm like, oh, they're just doing the fight sequence from Children of Men, except they're using JCVD, and they're just making this one long, elaborate one take, and it's kind of meta, and it's kind of look how funny we are, and look how, you know, he's getting old, and he can't quite hack it anymore. And yeah. I really appreciated that, because that was the first movie that I remember watching a long action sequence and being like, wait a minute, they haven't cut yet.
Right.
Like, holy shit, you know?
Yeah, man, and that goes on for a while, too.
Oh, yeah, that's a long one, yeah. And then remember, you know, I'm watching that movie, and I'm like 20 to 30 minutes past that scene going, I can't believe they did that, you know? Yeah. I can't believe they pulled that off. Still thinking about it. And so this time around, you know, the big sequence is what it is. I mean, it's as typical as it gets with the hostages and trying to get, you know, trying to figure out your way to make sure no one gets hurt and all of those sorts of things. And I think that they realize that that's not really that interesting of a story because of the way that they cut it and they have flashbacks and how did he get here and how did this guy get here and what happened to him before he got into the cab with the real crabby lady from Brussels and yes. You know, they just keep dancing around because the present day isn't really that exciting.
No, it's not. No, it's not. And yeah, yes, yeah, Van Damme does, you know, act as a hero to protect the hostages by engaging with the robbers and also basically making himself the forefront of it all and talk to the negotiator. And yeah, you got the dude from the SWAT team who's a total dick and is just like trying to find any way possible to pin Van Damme on this to boost his own career. As far as that's what I took from it, personally. Sorry, I got tongue tied.
Oh, that's right.
I just lost my train of thought. I apologize. But no, but you're right though. Like if the film just would have stayed in the post office / bank, it would have got boring real fast.
Oh yeah.
It got boring real fast because like, yeah, the people that are trying to like rob that bank, those characters aren't very interesting. They're very one dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have the diehard Van Damme fan, you have the crazy leader, and then you got the dude in the middle who will follow whoever.
Mm-hmm. And I did like that the leader was pretty well covered in that they didn't really light him that well. Yes. So it's like, it doesn't matter who this is. Like, you're not going to look up who the actor is. Like, it's just a guy. He's crazy. That's all you need to know.
Yes.
Like, we're not even going to bother.
I will tell you one thing though, the thing that like made me kind of like it made me sad as far as like watching it made me sad when he was in court and there's like two court scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And Van Damme is like, when the lawyer who's basically, you know, saying like, listen, cause like the, you know, Van Damme's wife in the film is fighting for custody of their daughter, full custody. And the lawyer's like, how can this young girl stay with this man who does this for a living and just starts pulling out all the movies and just says like, decapitated this person, ran over this person by a car, kicked this person in the face. Like he just kept going movie after movie and Van Damme gets up. He's like, listen, those movies put food on the table for them.
Mm-hmm.
And like the judge is like, you need to calm down. and this dude, and like the lawyer just keeps going and going and going. And Van Damme just gets to the point where he's just like, Jesus. And he just looks at the judge. He's like, "Can I go use the bathroom while this is going?"
Right.
You know, and you feel bad. But the thing that like really got me was when they went back to the court, and his daughter was like, when the judge asked, like, why don't you want to stay with your dad or whatever? And she's like, "I'm tired of the kids at school making fun of me because Jean-Claude Van Damme is my dad." I was like, "Damn."
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's fucked up.
Well, and I mean, that's a thing where wouldn't that be, like a parent's nightmare?
Yeah.
Right? Is to like, look, I love you fine. No, sure, I love you, but I don't want to be with you because I can't handle these kids making fun of me because of who you are.
Right. Even though who he is what's giving them everything they need to live.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
You are such a joke that, sure, I'll take the money and mom will take the money, but I can't handle living with you.
Right. Yeah, it's fucked up.
Ugh.
It's Ugh. So fucked up.
And you know, now, those are the sort of things where I'm like, okay, well, this has got to be, you know, and especially to the scene that we're getting to here soon is, okay, so it was written by Van Damme, right? No.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing that is so astounding to me. It's like, wait a minute. Okay, so he's you know, he had to have had some sort of input at some point for something, especially for the long take. But, you know, the long, just talking to the audience take. But I was very surprised to see that he didn't have some hand in writing this.
Yeah, I was too. I was really surprised. Very, very surprised. I know he's a producer on it.
Mm-hmm.
I know that for sure. But yeah, this movie has three writers. The director, Mabrouk El McCree, Christopher Turpin, and Frederic Benoudi. Those are the three writers. But I was really surprised. I was really surprised that Van Damme did not write this movie, because it hits close to home for him in some things. Like when he's talking about the studio system, that's hitting close to home. Mm-hmm. When he's talking about I want to be on a fucking screen again, that hits close to home for him. When he's talking about like losing a gig to like Seagal, that's
because he said he was going to cut his ponytail.
Yeah, yeah,
and like, that's funny. And you know, that's the thing where it's like, oh, that is such a good line. Like it makes you laugh, but you're like, fuck, that's probably true.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's fucked up, and it's really fucked up. And like he just wants to not be back on top. He just wants to be respected.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the whole thing. He wants to be respected, but at the same time, when we get to that scene, and I watched that monologue he does like two times,
because mm-hmm.
it's like a 6 or 7 minute take.
Yeah,
and it's a single take.
Oh yeah,
and it's a single take. So I know people make fun of Jean-Claude Van Damme's accent, and they think he can't really act. Oh, he can.
Yeah, he's got chops in his native language for sure.
Yes, yes, he does. He definitely has chops in his native language. So, like, I know he can do it. I just know, like, yeah, man, like sometimes his English isn't the best.
Sure,
but man, his native language. Oh man, he fucking killed it.
Yeah, and when he's speaking French, he definitely knows what he's doing. You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, it sounds just as good as, you know, any other actor, you know, delivering lines.
Oh yeah, no doubt. But that 6 minute monologue,
mm-hmm.
which, yeah, I know this is a movie and it's not quote unquote real. There's some real cryptic shit in that.
Well, yeah, I mean, he is directly speaking to the audience. He says in there, you know, basically this is a movie. I get that, but I'm going to talk to you for a second.
Mm-hmm.
And he just goes on and on. And that's the thing where I'm watching it and I'm watching an actor that doesn't know his place in the world. I'm watching like a guy who just doesn't know what to do and is just fed up.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a guy who's just met his limit and is trying to justify all of the things that he's done that weren't necessarily things that he should have done. You know, when he starts talking about drugs. He starts talking about all of his wives, and it's a thing where it's just one of the more, raw performances I've seen. And I just could not have been more attached to him than I was watching it. I was like, oh my God, like good for you just to sort of bear it all.
Yeah.
And just to be like, I don't give a shit what people think. Like people think I'm a joke, mm-hmm. you know? Well, fuck you. Here's what it is.
Yeah. Like when he talked about how when he got to America, he didn't speak English. He didn't speak a lick of English. He just had some martial arts magazines and he had martial arts experience. He's just trying to tell people I can do stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that led to that first break, which then led to another break and led another break. But then he also kind of talked about the drug stuff. He talked about like, you know, the multiple marriages and how, and it was like this weird comparison of like how in film, like what's your favorite movie? But like when you're a mother and you have multiple children, you don't say which is the favorite child.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this thing about talking, but like he also had multiple wives. And so it's this really weird cryptic talk. But that scene, how that scene is set up, because like, you know, he's still a hostage with the other hostages, just trying to keep things cool. The scene happens and then he's just sitting with everybody else and then his chair that he's sitting in, it just starts to rise up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pulled out of the entire scene.
Yeah, it's exactly like a drama, like how a play would close the curtain when someone's giving a monologue. Yeah. And they're like, no, 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 I'm talking to you now. I'm talking to the audience. Fuck all these other people. You know, this is just something I need to talk to you about. To steal a black box phrase. So that's the thing where, I mean, I was, like I said, I was just in it and I was completely with him. And, you know, he's sitting there and he's wiping tears from his eyes and he's, you know, he's talking about how he can't pick between these different wives because they all have, you know, different things that, different qualities that he likes about them. And, you know, people don't understand that and the media doesn't understand that. And that's not, and he's basically saying, that's not my problem. Mm-hmm. That's not my fault. You know, like, that's your fault. I'm just trying to live my life. And you're the one who's saying I'm not doing something that I should be or I'm doing something I shouldn't be.
Yeah.
You know, and while he does, while he is depicted in a positive light, especially towards the end, which is another sequence that I really enjoyed with the sort of little fake out, you just don't ever see that in movies where an actor's like, well, I'm just going to talk to the audience for a bit. And I know my career is almost over. And I know that I've, you know, am sort of at the bottom of the curve that I used to be at the top of. And, you know, I don't get it. You know, it's a guy that doesn't have any answers is the thing it's sad to me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no. Trust me. I get it. And I definitely agree with you. Like, it reminded me of, there was a reality show. My friend John Ward got me hip to this. And sometimes you can find clips of it on YouTube and some other places. And it was called Jean-Claude Van Damme Behind Closed Doors. And it was a British reality show. And this is from like me. I don't like reality shows at all. They're not my thing. But, it was aired in the United Kingdom in 2011. And it's only 8 episodes. But, there was an episode, I think it was like the 6th episode, and this is where the clip is from. And this is what reminded me, as soon as he started talking in the JCVD movie, when he goes on that monologue, there's a scene in like episode 6 where he's on a real life emotional roller coaster and like he lost his temper and like just started breaking down, like crying after being rejected for a movie role. And he starts talking about how he built up his career, how he got started, and like all these problems that he's had, and like how this wife that's currently with him, like, you know, because she's in the reality show too, how fucked up he was, and like she stuck by his side, and all this other stuff, and I was just like, man, I can't watch this.
Mm.
It's like, I can't watch this, man. Like, I can't watch this. Like, you know, like, yeah, I know he had drug problems, all this other stuff. I'm like, yo, like, he just put it all out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, damn. I was like, and it just, man, it makes you sad, you know? And then, like, and it also, like, puts that, you know, removes that curtain that everybody that has a Hollywood career has had a fantastic life. I'm like, and that's not always true. I mean, some people can balance it out. Some people can't. Some people, like, get into stuff that, like drugs or like substance abuse, and it damages their careers extensively. Some can turn around. You know, some can, some can't. And some people just like, yo, I'm just in it for this and I got to go. But like, this is also a man that once said that he had been blacklisted in Hollywood since 1994 after refusing a $36 million deal from offer from Universal Studios because he was wasted when he got the offer.
Mm.
And he feels that he's been blacklisted ever since. I don't know. You know, I don't know. And I think that's the whole thing with this movie. It also leaves me in the state of, I don't know. Like, who is Jean-Claude Van Damme?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then that's the whole thing. Who is Jean-Claude Van Damme? Is it the dude that gave you the 6-minute monologue? Is it the dude that went to the teller and was like, listen, I got money. I got a lot of money tied up, but I need this money so I can pay my lawyer. Because like I owe like $400,000 in lawyer fees trying to fight for my child.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, and even though like this is a movie, it's not real. It just makes you wonder. It's like, yo, who is Jean-Claude Van Damme?
Mm-hmm.
And that was the whole thing I got from the film. And like, I think for me, the moment it became like you were about to really get an answer who's Jean-Claude Van Damme was at the end of the movie where his daughter shows up. And like is because his mother shows up for like the phone call.
Oh right, once he's in prison, sure.
Once he's in prison, and his daughter shows up and picks up the phone, and he picks up the phone and he attempts to talk to his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I'm like, okay, this is Jean-Claude.
Yeah, and what I like about that is he doesn't have some deep thing to say to her. He doesn't have just like a hi and then it cuts out. He sort of hesitates to pick up the receiver to begin with,
mm-hmm.
and then picks it up hurriedly because he knows he's wasting time, says hello, and then whacks himself in the head a few times.
Yes.
Right? So he knows that he's fucking things up. He knows that he's not what he could be or should be, and that is so incredibly frustrating because it's easy if a guy's just, oh, he's dumb, doesn't know any better. You know, he's just an idiot. But a guy that knows that he's doing, making poor choices, but can't stop making them, that's heartbreaking to me. A guy that knows I shouldn't be doing this, but I just can't, you know, I don't know what else to do. And this is just kind of how things are turning out. You know, I mean, that's tough. And the thing that disappoints me after this movie is, okay, I see this film and I'm like, you know, that was a nice dramatic role. It definitely shows that he can handle stronger material to work with. You know, he can handle dramatic roles. He doesn't need to just be an action figure. And then the next movie he produces or that he comes out in is Universal Soldier Regeneration.
Need that check, man.
And then he comes out with Soldiers. Then he comes out with Assassination Games. Now, I haven't seen the last two, but I can tell you what they're about based on the name of the movie. There's not a lot of deep, you know, there's not a lot of deep thought in those films, I can guarantee. And that is disappointing because, yeah, he needs the money, sure. But, God, I wish he was in better films.
You know,
even The Expendables 2, his name is basically Villain.
Yes.
And yes. I'm like, God damn, like, I don't know. I just wish that, you know, you think about the age old joke of, you know, in the 80s or 90s having, Schwarzenegger and Stallone in like a, you know, in a costume drama, like an English drama, you know, and have it about how those two guys aren't action stars and that's all they are. And, you know, Stallone tried breaking away from that with Copland and some other films, and Schwarzenegger's tried that as well. But I just think that I just wish that he would get more opportunities, Van Damme would.
Yeah. But at the same time, like you had talked about before, like all those movies that you listed off, which like, you know, direct to video,
mm-hmm.
Or VOD, video on demand. We don't say direct to video anymore. I'm sorry. that's passe.
That's right.
I apologize. You want to work.
That's true.
You know, true. You want to work. And because you want to work, you will just say, well, fuck, okay, I'll take this. And maybe somebody will take me seriously again and I can get this spot. You know what I mean? I can get that role that I should be respected for. No? Okay, well, what check? What's this for? Is the possibility it's going to be on the screen? Maybe? Oh, fuck it. I'll do it. Mm-hmm. You, because like you want to work. It's like the Samuel Jackson thing. The only difference between Sam is the Sam's movies. Sam will have people forget, man. Like go look at Sam's bio or Sam's filmography. This motherfucker has a ton of movies that are VOD,
mm-hmm.
but he always has at least three or four movies that are on the screen, and he can float between both worlds without a problem. And he's been able to do that since Pulp Fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Beforehand, yeah, people forget he was in Jungle Fever as a crack addict.
Yeah, you know, do the right thing. Sure.
Do the right thing using a bunch of Spike Lee stuff. You know, people forget he was in Coming to America.
The dude in McDowell's, yeah.
Yes, the dude that was robbing the McDowell's.
Eddie Murphy gets his ass.
Yes, so people forget about that, but seriously, ever since Pulp Fiction, he has been able to float in the world of video on demand and the big screen at the same time without any problems.
Mm-hmm.
But like not everybody can do that.
Yeah, what a luxury that is to have.
Right, but the thing is, but here's the thing with Sam though. Sam is more than one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like Jean-Claude Van Damme never like really, like with the exception of like JCVD, he never really did any type of drama or anything like that. You know what I mean? Like the ability to just like go act like Jean-Claude Van Damme didn't do what Jackie Chan did. Jackie Chan, when he first came to the States in like the 80s, he did like movies like The Protector and like another movie. He's like, man, this shit ain't working. I'm going back home. Mm. And he did action movies his way. Yes, he did action movies and stuff, but he also did other stuff too.
Mm-hmm.
And Jean-Claude never really did that. So, and I'm not trying to blame him or anything, but it's just like, sometimes like some people know how to take control of their careers, but sometimes some people can't take control of their careers because there's other things that's also hindering them too. But like Jackie Chan was able to find his path and then came back to the States again, took shit over, and then went back home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a matter of fact, perfect example of this is yet another Police Story movie called Police Story Lockdown, which is kind of reminiscent to The Raid, but it's still very good though. Mm. But he still goes back home. He goes home and he does things at home. And I wonder what Jean-Claude Van Damme's career would have been like if he'd have found that type of home away from Hollywood.
Yeah, if he would do some European films, you know, some French films or what have you, and just worry about the work as opposed to the Hollywood of it.
Yes.
You know, that's the sort of thing that I guess I wished he would have done. So, I don't know. I mean, I still, you know, I will definitely fight for the, for that sequence in JCVD. And, that is definitely something that I think is one of his high points. Just because I think that he, as an actor, sort of reaches his pinnacle at that. Not as an action hero, but as an actor.
As an actor, yeah. that is his best point. Like that is his highest point. Like, yeah, yeah. Like you know, because Sly had performed in dramas.
Yeah, I mean, Rocky's not much of an action movie. The first Rocky.
Right.
I mean, it gets there.
But see, but people only think of Rocky. They only think of Rambo, and he had done stuff in the past. Before Rocky, before anybody really knew he was Stallone. But he, you know, he was an actor. But, you know, so then like when he does Copland, everybody's like, oh, this is a surprise. And some people thought it was a joke because he came in as an overweight cop or whatnot. Some people thought it was a joke. Some people took it serious. I'm like, yo, when you're an actor, you're supposed to be able to do that. That's how, right. You know, that's how I looked at it. That's how I looked at it. So, but I like Copland. I do. Well, I like Copland. But, yes, I do have some issues with it, but I did like it. But like, and everybody was just like, whoa, we never seen Sly like this before. I'm like, yo, he's an actor. That's what he's supposed to do. So yeah, man, it's but Hollywood's a weird place, mm-hmm. You know, in film and television and all forms of media, man, it's so weird, man. So weird.
Yeah, it is strange because, you know, I feel like as, people that are more on the writing side, it's always this, you know, you can't penetrate into the Hollywood system. You know, it's such a tough time to get in there and be a writer, you know, and get in and write a screenplay that could be produced. But then I see, you know, and hear these sorts of stories of these different actors that can't find any material. You know, they can't find the sort of material that's worth a damn to work with. And it's like, what the fuck kind of corrupt ass system do we got going on to where, you know, there's writers that want to break in and have all these original ideas, allegedly. And then we have all these actors that are frustrated and can't find original ideas. And it's like, what the hell is going on?
Hmm.
So whatever. What can you do? Yeah. Can't do anything about it. All right. Well, anything else about JCVD that you want to mention before we close this baby out? Or anything about Jean-Claude Van Damme in general?
As far as like Jean-Claude Van Damme in general goes, if you want to watch some good JCVD movies, I would probably tell you, like I said before, watch Bloodsport, watch Kickboxer, Death Warrant's okay. Let's see here.
Universal Soldier?
Universal Soldier is not bad. Like, Universal Soldier, like, you're either going to enjoy that or you're just going to hate it.
Luke Devereaux.
Yes. The John Woo, like, one of John Woo's earliest American films, Hard Target.
Mm-hmm.
A guilty pleasure film of mine, Time Cop.
Okay.
Time Cop's a guilty pleasure film. Like, I haven't watched it in a very long time, but the times I did watch it, I was like, man, this actually isn't a bad sci-fi film. Yes, you do get the obligatory, I'm Jean-Claude Van Damme, so I must do the splits. but I like it. I do. I really like it. But
and if you can't tell me that you're not a Street Fighter guy, though.
I'm going to go on this boat and go up Reaver. And I'm going to kick that son of a bitch bison's ass so hard that the next bison wannabe is going to feel it.
Why could he not be Mortal Kombat instead? John Cage.
Both of those movies have so many problems. Mm-hmm. I like the Mortal Kombat film, like, it holds a special place for me because of that era and that time. It's not a good movie.
No.
At all. Street Fighter is something that has so much ability, and when you realize that, like, the dude that put it together was the dude that, like, you know, they always give credit that Steven D'Souza wrote Die Hard, but it was, like, a lot of other people to help make Die Hard Die Hard. Mm-hmm. And, like, when they're like, hey, let's give Steven D'Souza full reign on Street Fighter, I'm like, oh, God.
You gotta get, like, that Raul Julia, though.
Yo! Dude, he chewed up the scenery, though, his guy. Like, he was the best thing about that movie. Like, the best thing about the Street Fighter movie is Raul Julia as Guile and the soundtrack. That's it.
Well, yeah. And Kylie Minogue no good, or?
Well, you know what, man? That's before anybody even remember, like, oh, that was the girl who sang Locomotion?
Yeah. That girl that wore no clothes in the 90s?
Yeah. Yeah, like, don't get me wrong. Like, she looks great as Cammy, but it's not a good movie. Like, it comes off as a very bad G.I. Joe movie.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
It comes off as a really bad G.I. Joe movie. And, like, it has so much promise. And because, like, Street Fighter is a fantasy, and it's a fantasy, and it's a cool video game, and people have these really cool powers, and, like, they strip all of that out. They strip all that out. I'm like, if you take the fantasy out of Street Fighter, what's the fucking point?
Yeah, really.
And, like, Street Fighter has had some of the worst movies ever. Ever. I'm talking about the American stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like, the anime stuff is kind of cool. The comics are kind of cool. You know, the video games, man, tons of video games, always fun. But, man, these American Street Fighter movies, fucking terrible.
Wasn't it Kristen Kruk? Wasn't that her name from Smallville?
How bad
was that?
For fun, I got a copy of that movie for 50 cents. And 50 like,
cent wasted.
Man, it was 50 cent wasted. And I laughed and laughed and laughed and laughed and cried.
What about Ming-Na in the first?
Yo, see, I love me some Ming-Na.
Now, how the hell is she 52 years old?
And still look fine.
Unbelievable.
So fine.
Jeez.
So fine. Amazing. Amazing. Oh, yeah. It's
difficult to believe.
Yeah, man. No, she's gorgeous. Yeah. She's one of my favorites of all time. Well, all time. You might want to check out Sudden Death.
Sudden Death, sure. Yeah.
You might want to check that out. Kind of diehardish, but still, it's pretty good. And after that,
Sudden Death with Van Damme playing a guy named Darren.
Yes.
I'm sure.
Yes. Then after that, that's when it starts to get shaky for, like, a good long period of time.
Yeah, I remember being in the video store in 97, right before going to college, and seeing copies of, what is it, The Quest?
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't think that's going to happen for me.
Yeah, man. The Quest, Maximum Risk. And who? Come on, man. Can you forget about – who can forget about the Jean-Claude Van Damme, Dennis Rodman
double team? Oh, no. Not the worm. Whew. Dennis Rodman. Boy, I hated me some Dennis Rodman.
Mickey Rourke was the bad guy in that movie.
Was he really?
Yes.
The fuck? I got to look it up.
Yo, like, that movie is a hot mess.
Oh, my God. Stavros.
Gold
Smythe. Man, these are some terrible names.
It's so bad.
It is bad.
But yeah, for real, like, think about it though, like, from basically from 95, all from like, mostly 96. Let's start with The Quest. Because The Quest went in the movie theaters. Now here's the thing. The Quest went in the movie theaters. Maximum Risk was in movie theaters. Double Team was in movie theaters. Knockoff was in movie theaters. Universal Soldier The Return was in movie theaters.
Legionnaire though?
Legionnaire was not. And that was because that was direct to video. And I remember folks making a big deal about that movie because like, just there's a bunch of production issues. But from 1999, all the way to 2008. He was not on a movie screen. JCVD in limited release made it to the movie theaters. And like say for instance, like then he did another Universal Soldier movie. Nope. He made it back to the movie screens as the voice of Master Croc in Kung Fu Panda 2.
Yeah.
And then yet again, not in a movie theater in 2011, 2012, until Expendables 2. And then he's back to direct-to-video.
Oh, my God. I remember The Order. Ooh. The Order with Charlton Heston and the mean-looking dude from The X-Files.
Ooh.
Brian Thompson,
who
was the alien guy. And Van Damme has two different roles, co-written by Van Damme. What a pile. I believe I didn't make it through the entire thing.
I'm sorry.
Was one of those where I was like, that must have been some kind of drunken situation. I don't know, but that was not a good choice on my part.
Yeah, we all make the mistakes now.
Yeah, that was like, you know, 01, I'm still in college. It was one of those kind of, it must have been, that's when I had one of those dual deck VHS players.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, I had one of those, yes.
Yeah, where you could play and then record. And I would go and I would get $5 for 5 days for five movies at the local mom and pop video store. And I didn't give a shit what they were. I'd tape them on there and they'd be on the super long play.
Oh, yeah.
Get so you three get like movies.
Yep.
And it all looked like crap. And I was like, oh, I don't give a shit how it looks. I just want to watch it.
You gotta record it on SP for that high quality for 2 hours. Mm. 2 hours. But if it's over 2 hours, you gotta at least put in an LP for four.
No. SLP all the way.
For that. And
I'd be pissed if the movie was too long.
Or you could get them like tapes that did like the SLP for 8 hours.
Oh yeah. You know, I weep. You know, people give me shit about all the comic books I have. I weep at the amount of VHS tapes I bought.
Whew.
And I'm like, wow, I had a pile of VHS movies. And I'd have, you know, I'd have the lettering all nice on the label on the front.
Mm-hmm. Oh, never, yeah.
Never watched them.
Putting that work, man.
I'd get the cuts just right. Mm-hmm. I was a savage for a while. I used to tape Nebraska football games and I would push stop in the commercials because I didn't know any better. I didn't know I could push pause.
That's dedication right there.
Yeah. And I'd start getting the editing down and I was like, look at me, just get this in. And then if I got it in there, I'd put the, if I fit all three movies in, then I'd put the trailers at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. But see, back then, he was like, man, these tapes are special. And now it's just like, man, we got YouTube.
Yeah. Got YouTube. I got Netflix. I got too many. I got 240 damn shows on Netflix I'm supposed to be watching.
Yep. I got Hulu. You got options. And the thing is, even with all this streaming, sometimes this stuff ain't available.
Yeah. Now that's, that's where I'm like, you know, I got to check myself sometimes because I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I can't find a copy of, you know, The Order, Jean-Claude Van Damme's The Order on Netflix. You know, and I'm all pissed about it.
Yeah, man. Like, on Netflix, Kickboxer is available until December 1st.
Oh, is that right? Well, good thing we did this when we did this then.
Yes, because otherwise I'd be like, well, I got to rent it, I guess. Unless somebody popped it on YouTube. I remember, hell, a couple days ago, somebody was like, oh, I know how I'll get past copyright. I'll put the Japanese release of Furious 7 on YouTube. I'm like, really? 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 Are you kidding me? And that mug was on YouTube for like 2 weeks before YouTube was like, no. Universal found out. I was like, no, take that down. But yeah, man, like, it is insane what people put on YouTube.
If you're wanting to get this Blu-ray of Kickboxer, it is a very long wait via Netflix.
Oh, it ain't coming.
So if you, that means there's like 3 in the U.S.
You better off just going to Amazon and just spending that bread and just have a copy shipped to you. And like, and then just basically create your own Netflix and then just like ship it up. Like I, like your Netflix is just Kickboxer. And if somebody wants to rent it, you just send it out to them and then they give it back to you and you just send it out to the next person.
You're like, hey, I got it. Who needs it?
Mm-hmm. It's like, I got Kickboxer and Animal Olympics. Who wants them?
Oh my goodness. Well, I'm glad we got these sort of lighter. I mean, JCVD is pretty heavy in a section, but, you know, it was nice to get that. We did Gone Girl in the Podshot episodes before this, and we're doing The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford after this one.
Mm.
So those are quite different than Kickboxer.
Yes, they are. Yes.
So if you have any comments, suggestions, or movies that you'd like to hear us talk about specifically for Podshots, you could email us at plainlabelpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow the show over at Twitter. Our handle is @plainlabelpod, where you can follow me. I'm @ericwilliams79. We also have a Facebook page where you could like the show. Just search for Plain Label Podcast. And if you wanted to help us out a little bit, you could head over to amazon.com and search for our wish list. It's full of movies that I selfishly want, equipment that we need, and a whole host of other goodies in case you're in the giving mood. Just search for the wish list called Plain Label Podcast. So I do want to thank Mr. Pryor for once again coming on and discussing yet another film with me. I know it did interrupt our little John Woo love fest we were doing there for a little while, but if people wanted to hear more from you or get in contact with you, where could they do so?
Oh, yeah, sure. You can find me on Twitter at Sean, S-H-A-W-N, R, the letter R, Pryor, P-R-Y-O-R. I also have a podcast, The Black Box. You can get that at hhwlod.com, and you can also check for the RSS feed on that site as well. The Black Box will be ending its 6-year run at the end of either January or February. Mm-hmm. And, we're going to put a close to it, but it doesn't mean that I'm going to stop podcasting. It's just, it's time to retire the Black Box and rise anew like the Phoenix and, still podcast, but just do something a little bit differently. And like, actually I got a podcast. Well, by the time this airs, that Black Box episode explaining why the Black Box is coming to an end, will be out by then. But no, I'm still going to podcast. So please continue to listen if you want to. We still got plenty of stuff to come out. Also, you can check out crowntakerstudios.com, which I've still yet to update because I've been too busy this year. And also, if you're curious about what kind of books the studio Crown Taker Studios is doing, check out. You can go to Amazon, type in Crown Taker Studios. We have books available for the Kindle. I think you can do that Barnes & Noble or the Kobo or a couple other places digitally as well. Besides that, Cash & Carry, the Kickstarter that I did this year, there will be a 72-page square-bound book, Cash & Carry book, next year in the fall from Action Lab Entertainment. And I'm collaborating with Jay Reed and B. Alex Thompson on a football comic book called Force, which is an acronym for Football Operations Rated Championship Elite. Mm-hmm. That will also be out in the fall of 2016 as well. So I'll be on the lookout for that. And but yeah, man, that's pretty much it right now.
Well, there you go. Well, this will be coming out an episode or two prior to our 100th in a row every other week.
Nice.
Episode. So it seems like we're just now getting to 100, but it's every single Wednesday since we came out, and you know, it feels like forever, but it's definitely not a 6-year run. It's only since 2012. But we'll be celebrating that in ways that only Rachel and I can, which basically means she's not preparing anything. And, so that's kind of how, how that's going to go. But thank you again, Sean, and thank you for listening. And we'll be back in 2 weeks with another co-host and another film. Never surrender!
You're